Well, if you're tuned into the changing seasons, you probably notice which birds are coming in and going on at different points of the year. But so often, at least for me, I'll hear a bird that I might even catch a glimpse of and might or might not be able to identify. Steve Bechkel is a broadcast journalist as well as a very experienced birder and naturalist. We've had him on the show, but not for quite a while, actually. He's the author of birding guides and books, including All of This and Robins Too, a guide to the 50 or so best places to find birds in Wisconsin. He leads international birding travel groups as well, and he joins us today from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Eau Claire. And let me see if I can get him on right now. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah.
You know, it was, my wife mentioned the other morning, we were walking out in the early morning, and she said, "How? Listen to that." And we stopped to listen, and it was birds.
And, you know, the bird chorus, yeah.
The bird chorus.
I want to say, first of all, that, you know, this idea of March 21st, forget all that.
Yeah.
Spring has begun.
Yeah.
And spring in Wisconsin really does start in about the middle of February with the return of things like horned larks and some of these other birds that start showing up. Geese are moving. So, you know, the seasons, if you wait till March 21st, you're going to be late for the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really, I stopped to listen. I thought, oh, man, spring's kind of here. It was
a
great
feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. She even posted on her Facebook page, "I can't believe it. I heard the birds are back." What is it about birds that fascinates us?
Well, many things. First of all, they're very visible and they're very colorful. They're easy to see. The fact that there are about 800 of them in North America means that they are manageable. Bugs are great, too, but to understand bugs and to wrap your head around bugs, you have to deal with about 100,000 different kinds of beetles alone. And so, you know, birds are manageable. They're pretty. They sing. They brighten our mornings. And I think there's a certain connection to the aspect of flight. It kind of inspires our imagination and motivates us. These beautiful things are soaring around in the air. You can go on and on. All the poems that are inspired by birds, there's a good reason for that. I think they are very inspirational creatures. And we love mammals. We love fish. But how can you really get close to a fish, you know, like you can to a bird? And so they do enter into our lives, and they make a big impact.
Oh, and they sure do. And you've been, of course, a birder, an interested guy in birds for forever.
Since I was 11, 1969.
Yep, started out. What's your, do you keep a life list?
Oh, I keep a life list. I keep a list about everything. I keep a list of birds identified at highway speeds. I have county lists, state lists, all kinds of things.
Oh.
And now with eBird, there's a thing through the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology where you can be a citizen scientist every day. You can send your totals into their database, and you can contribute to what birds are being seen and where.
Yeah, and I tell you, that Cornell Lab of Ornithology is absolutely wonderful, isn't it? I mean,
it's made all of us working scientists, and so we can all contribute.
Yeah, actually. Well, how many have you got? How many
life birds?
Yeah.
Let me think. I'm in 900-something. That includes everything I've seen in North America and Central America. In the U.S., in what we call the ABA area, the countable birds north of Mexico, I think I'm at 617. I just got some last week, a western screech owl and a LeConte's thrasher. At the thrasher spot, they called it, the burning spot I was at. It's actually called it. So that wasn't in Wisconsin, though. That was in Arizona.
No. Well, Steve Bechkel, our guest today, as we talk with him about birds and birding. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, comment, or a photo. Maybe you've got a great bird photo, and we have a few up there right now that are just wonderful. You can do that at the Larry Mueller Show. And I always get lots of calls and questions when we talk birds. And Paul in Watertown with us. Paul, hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great. What's on your mind?
I've got a question for identification. But first of all, on Monday I saw my first sandhill crane, and I've already seen two robins this spring.
There you go.
So you're right, it's here. Now, and I've also, in the Oconomowoc area, spotted two different bald eagles, two mature bald eagles flying around. I've seen them a few times in the last week. My question is, on the side of the road, I saw a big hawk-like bird. Its back was to me. It was dark brown. I thought, dark brown, what? It flew, the top of its tail was white, the ends of his tail were dark brown. He turned around, I saw the bottom, it looked just like an osprey. Is the top of the tail on the osprey white?
Well, Paul, there'd be no ospreys here yet. They're migrants coming from the Gulf Coast.
Right.
And so it'd be very early to have one. So it's unlikely that it would be an osprey, but it's probably an immature bald eagle, would be my guess.
But it wasn't mottled at all. It was a solid brown on the whole back, you know.
Uh-huh. Was it preying? Was it eating some carcass?
It was on a post. I've seen them a couple of times now.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, it could be a red-tailed hawk then.
Yeah.
In fact, my rule of thumb is that it's a red-tailed hawk until proven innocent, because nine-tenths of the birds you see, the big raptors that you see, are red-tailed hawks, especially in winter, although there are rough-legged hawks. But they're very common roadside birds, brown on top, and that white that you saw on the tail could be an immature bird that the rusty color isn't quite showing yet, and they are white underneath.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a big hawk. It was a big one.
Yeah, well, it could have been. I mean, red tails can get pretty good size, actually.
They are a very big, stocky beautio, and they are, you know, especially when they're close to you down on the ground, you'd be impressed by their size. Their wingspread is about 48 inches across.
Yeah, it's great. Paul, thanks. Sounds like a great experience to me. Thank you very much for calling. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Bill in Pewaukee. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Larry, and it's a pleasure to speak with Steve. I've had a persistent problem here for a couple of years. We live here in Pewaukee on a couple of acres on the side of a moraine, and we feed about 20-plus varieties and species of birds during the year. And I've made a rather nice roosting box, but I can't get birds to roost in it. I've moved it around a couple of times, and still no takers. We have any suggestions?
Hmm. Yeah, how big is the hole in the roosting box? Tell me about dimensions.
The roosting box is about 2 feet tall, and it's a foot square on the bottom, and the hole is maybe 2 inches.
Hmm. Okay, so it's the right size for a woodpecker. Probably a little too small for a screech owl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sounds big. It's very roomy inside.
Yeah, it is. I've got perches in there. I've got some screening in there for the ones to latch onto the side. But nobody
is it a south? Is it a south facing box?
No, it's face. Well, I can face it any direction, but right now it's mounted on a pole facing east.
Okay. Yeah. South is favorable. Birds like an owl, for example, a screech owl, would love to sit in the box if it could perch with its face or its body out the hole. And it loves to soak in the sun. Woodpeckers aren't quite that same way, but a southern exposure is nice. The birds like that warmth, and it's less of the cold wind blowing in. It's just a matter of patience. Whether you get the right woodpecker in your neighborhood to take that up, it's a matter of their discretion and their choice. Is there better habitat somewhere else, a tree cavity somewhere else that they're choosing? Are there no woodpeckers to fill it up?
Yeah.
But, you know, the hole is important. If it's too big, the small birds don't want it because anything can get in there after them. And so they're very particular about the size of the hole. 2 inches is too big for chickadees, too big for nuthatches, too big for downy woodpecker. And so what bird you get then is, you know, could it be, you know, is it big enough for a pileated? Probably not. So the question is what bird is going to see that box and see it as a fit.
And thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. Steve Bechkal, our guest today, as we talk with him about birds and birding, and actually joining me fresh from her victory as the Wisconsin Public Radio champion birder, Judith Sears Poisson.
As long as it's only Blue Jays and Cardinals and Robins that I have to ID, I might very well be a champion.
tell you what, we've been enjoying this guy. I've been enjoying this conversation. Hope you have too, with Steve Bechkal, learning about bird watching, and we'll get back to that conversation. But first, we need to take a couple minutes to ask for your support of the programs you enjoy. Listeners help pay the bills at Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are in our winter membership drive. Judith with me, and we're asking you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to make a gift in support of the programs you count on, and we always have goals.
We always have goals. Last hour, the goal was 45 pledges. We got 16, a little shy, but we know you love Kathleen Dunn's show just like you love Larry Mueller's show. So we know that'll all come out in the wash in the end. But right now, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,000. This extremely generous match is offered by generous supporters from Madison. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Get your pledge doubled right now. It's a great opportunity. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Chances are the Ideas Network has covered an issue that's close to you, and you know it might be alternative medicine, it could be state issues, it could be the environment, birds like we're talking mm-hmm. about today. We try to bring you shows that we hope you'll find relevant and interesting and fun and enjoyable. And because WPR touches your life, I hope you will make a pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And giving to WPR is easy. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, maybe $10 a month.
This donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs, so make your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Please give as generously as you can.
If you're like me, you probably spend more money than you realize during the course of a day. A cup of coffee here, lunch there, a magazine maybe. It adds up to a lot of money over the course of a month.
You also listen to WPR every day. It's just as important as those other daily things you enjoy. So spend some money on it.
Pledge your support now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can do two good things at once. First, make a $120 donation to Wisconsin Public Radio. That'd be $10 a month. And choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. Your thank you gift will be in the form of 40 meals for those facing hunger through a Wisconsin food bank in your area. So do those two good things at once right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
More than 8,000 individuals and families are sustaining members of Wisconsin Public Radio. Setting up a monthly gift to WPR is simple, but your sustaining membership is a big deal. Your generosity benefits everyone who listens to WPR. That's more than 200,000 people every day. On behalf of those listeners and the staff of WPR, thank you.
And if you haven't pledged yet, I hope you will pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears Poisson asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. And maybe your gift is $5 or maybe it's $10 or maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And I want to remind you that we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,000 in effect right now offered by generous supporters from Madison. Your gift of $50 turns into $100 or $100 turns into $200 and so on. Take advantage of this match to make your gift go even further in paying for WPR programs. Get your pledge matched dollar-for-dollar right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listeners like you make the work we do here at Wisconsin Public Radio worthwhile, but members make our work possible.
You get all these great programs because members kick in a large portion of our budget. Become a member now. Help make WPR possible with your gift of any amount, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The best way to support this great source of news and information is by donating at WPR.org. Put your contribution to work right away. You can make your pledge with your credit card.
It takes just a moment of your time, and you'll be investing in a station that keeps you informed and entertained every single day. Your contribution in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 provides essential support to Wisconsin Public Radio.
And I have still not convinced enough people to get us over that dollar-for-dollar match.
I know.
In fact, we have about $1,800 to go the way it looks. So you can get in right now, pledge $120. It turns into $240, as a matter of fact, with that matching pledge. Give now at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552, and your support of WPR goes twice as far.
And as you said, with $120, it turns into $240, but also with that $10 a month donation, you can get our Food for 40 thank you gift and provide meals to those facing hunger right in your area. It's a great way to do two good things at once, actually three if you count the challenge grant, with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you make your pledge, consider becoming a sustainer. We were talking about this last night, and I was encouraging some of my friends to do this. Your sustaining membership automatically renews every year. You'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments. Easy to set up. Great way to make a lasting impact on WPR. You choose how much to give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Carrie from Milwaukee says, "You are the soundtrack for my day. Thank you." Well, thank you, Carrie, for your support. Join Carrie by going to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552 with your pledge right now. And thank you.
Talking birding today with Steve Bechko, broadcast journalist, very experienced birder, the author of birding guides and books, including All of This and Robins Too, a guide to the 50 or so best places to find birds in Wisconsin. He also leads international birding travel groups as well, which is a lot of fun, and joins us today from our WPR studios in Eau Claire. And tell you what, Steve, we had an email from Helen I thought it was kind of interesting. She says, "We've had up to 8 cardinals at a time eating the sunflower seeds we scatter on our driveway. They're beautiful, of course. Most often the birds are all males. Once in a while I see a female. My question is, where the heck are all the ladies?"
They're out there. Otherwise those poor males aren't going to have much fun this spring. When they gather in the spring, there's a lot of territorialism going on, a lot of territory assassination where the birds are trying to establish. But it hasn't quite happened just yet, and so the males can congregate, they can group up, but they're going to be bullies at the feeder, too. They'll chase females away. The females right now are out there, but in a little while they'll be busy selecting a nest site after they, of course, find a mate and they establish those territories. But you keep your eyes peeled. The females will show up when the males aren't chasing them away from the feeders.
I know you lead a lot of international birding travel groups. A caller, Steve, was in Panama recently, and the people there said Panama is an exceptional birding destination because not only do northern birds go down, quote-unquote, there, but birds from further south go up there as well. Is that true in your experience?
Yeah, Steve is a very lucky fellow to be able to spend his week of our winter in the jungla in Panama. It's one of the best destinations. Because it's centrally located in Central America, and there is still some tropical forest left down there, there are a lot of what we call endemic birds, birds that do not migrate, that are there in those forests. But the birds from Wisconsin, the warblers, vireos, tanagers, orioles, flycatchers, move into the tropics and kind of settle in those Central American zones like Costa Rica and Panama, and then into South America, like Ecuador and Venezuela and the rainforest, the Amazonian rainforest. So he's right. There's more birds in winter because they're packed together before they head north again to Wisconsin. So you get some of the very same warblers that are going to be in Wisconsin in spring down there in the winter.
You know, I spent a year, I taught at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad, and that also is a wonderful place. The Azurite Nature Center in Trinidad is
World famous.
Oh, yeah, world famous. I'm telling you, the birds there, and the Carity Wildlife Sanctuary in Trinidad, both those are absolutely wonderful places to go and watch birds. Those scarlet ibis that exist in the Carity Wildlife Sanctuary. Man, you talk about blaze pink, blaze orange coloring. It's really
what we
something.
Call eye candy. Yeah, that's the best stuff. I mean, birds that are very colorful tend to pull people into this activity. We often joke that once somebody gets a decent look at a scarlet tanager, they're hooked for life because it's such a beautiful thing, and your brain just kind of looks at that and says, "Wow," and you want more. You can't ever get enough of that kind of beauty.
Yeah.
By the way, I was researching while we were in the break when Bill called about his nest hole size, and I looked up in my handy Audubon Society Encyclopedia of North American Birds, which weighs about 9 pounds, but it's a very trusty volume. And I'm looking at the nest sizes, and for 2-inch nest hole, he gets starlings, and that's about it. And so, you know, 3 inches is a screech owl. Smaller, you get some of the birds like the nuthatches and downy woodpecker and chickadee. So, again, very important how big the nest hole is, because birds are picky about who gets in and who gets out.
So he could make that hole smaller.
Or bigger if you wanted a screech owl.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Edie in Baraboo. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering when the best time would be to go out to the Platte River to see the crane and duck and goose migration.
Oh, good question.
Yeah, the migration is peaking in, I'd say, late March to early April. And it's a very competitive thing to get a spot in one of the blinds. You can watch them, of course, right from the highway as you go through the interstate along the Platte. You see large numbers of these birds at that time. And so there's a window of opportunity. One of the cool things about that is that you can possibly see a whooping crane. One of the birds that's moving up from Aransas and heads up into Canada could be coming through at that same time. And so if you're really observant, you can spot those. But to get in the blind, you got to get up early. You got to get out there and claim a spot. And I think that, you know, if any time end of March is probably a good bet.
Okay. One other question. I was out there this fall out in that area.
Yeah.
And it was so dry. The water holes, the creeks, even the Platte River was way, way, way down. Does that affect them? Will they land or just keep going?
No, they'll probably still land. It's a habit. It's a break. But there, come spring, I'm thinking there will be water in it. I mean, the Platte can go dry. It can be drier at other times. It can be wetter, depending on how much snow melt or rain you get. But the birds are pretty habitual in what they do. And there's going to be a big break along there, a gathering of birds at any big water hole. Or they use these streams, geographical sites for migration, too. And that is, at that point, an east-west running river. But they're still implanted in their memory, these geographic landmarks. And so they travel there. That's what they've always done. And for them to stop, you know, where else can they stop? Can they stop in a town or in a shopping mall? So they gather where it is best. And there's always some kind of grass habitat along the river, if not frogs, then bugs perhaps. But something for them to eat, and they can gather there and rest up before they go on again and move on to the next one.
That's kind of their food court at the shopping mall.
That's right.
Think of it that way. Yeah. Thanks, Edie.
Thank you.
Have a great trip out there, by the way. Appreciate it very much. Edie's a great gal. Kevin in near Mondovi, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I had a question. I've got several bird feeders with sunflower seeds, black sunflower seeds, and a lot of different types of birds. But I've got a tufted titmouse that I noticed has a little metal tag on its right tarsal, and I was just wondering if you knew anything about that. I can't see on it clearly because it moves around so quickly and so much that.
Yeah,
you've got a bird bander in the area. Somebody has caught that bird in a mist net, and they've put a little band on him, and or her. And they are recording that. So if ever it's caught again, someone will report that to the bird banding database, and they will keep track of how old the bird is, how much it weighs, whether it's a young bird, an old bird. And it's especially important for migratory birds, but of course any bird caught in a net will do. And up here we have bird banding at Beaver Creek Reserve, for example, and the birds that are non-migratory, that are residents, like chickadees and titmice, are banded, as well as those that move around quite a bit. But the chances of recovering a bird are very slim.
Yeah.
Unless it is, of course, a chickadee, which will re-enter the net repeatedly, doesn't seem to learn a lesson, and so that titmouse may have been caught several times in that area by somebody who's banding them.
All right.
Oh, I see. Okay, and I had just one more quick question.
Sure.
I got a lot of blue jays, and I saw this one that is dark in color. It looks exactly like blue jay, except it's not blue. It's kind of almost black. It's dark gray. Wondering if you knew anything, but if that was just a genetic mess up or.
Well, I don't know if this answers your question, Kevin, but blue jays, their feathers, most birds that are colored have pigment in their feathers. Blue jays do not. All the blue birds, indigo buntings, they have feather structure that gives them the coloration. It's how the light hits the feather structure, these kind of triangular formed tubules in their feathers, reflect blue back at your eyes. And so in poor light, blue jays, bluebirds, indigo buntings especially, look darker. And so this could be a play of how the light affects it. In the best light, blue jays shine a sky blue. And in poor light, they look grayer. That could be the answer to that question. Otherwise, there are other issues in melanism where birds vary in how dark they are and how light they are.
Yeah.
I would doubt that you have a different species of birds. But sometimes there is a difference in genetics and how the bird's feathers play out when they're born. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he was with the other ones, and he was darker. But
he looked darker.
Thank you
There are other things, too. He could have rubbed up against something that was dirty.
Yeah.
I just heard a story the other day about woodpeckers in a burn area that were so dark from soot that you couldn't see the white markings. So yeah.
There you go. Thanks, Kev. Appreciate it. Keith in Dodgeville. Hi.
Hi, thanks. I have a question on observation of golden eagles out here in Iowa County. I'm used to seeing the bald eagles on the deer carcasses, but a little while ago, this was a couple miles south of the Wisconsin River, there was a deer carcass. There were maybe four bald eagles, but there were three golden eagles there on the carcass. The bald eagles wouldn't go anywhere near them. They seem to be a little bit wary of them, so they stayed away from the carcass. But my question was how common that is.
Not very common at all. Golden eagles in this in our western part of the state appear to come from Hudson Bay area. They move south and north. So in spring, very soon, as a matter of fact, they will be on the move, and they'll be heading north and out of here. But in the winter, we get pockets of them from Grant County down in the southwest, up into Buffalo County, and then over into Iowa. There's a strong population of them, but those birds are not common. And in fact, what happens is most of the time they are misidentified. People see an immature bald eagle, and they see it has maybe a darker head, or they don't see the white tail, and they think it's a golden eagle. But you know, to have three of them in any one place is very uncommon. We have seen on the recent golden eagle count in January, we had, I don't remember how many, Scott Mayhus, if you're out there, over 100 were counted in a day in that count. And so I think in one region, I had one zone on a map, but I think one of the zones had like 15 different golden eagles.
Wow.
But I always say to people, if you see an eagle along the Mississippi River in the river bottoms, perched in a tree over the river, it is probably not a golden eagle. The golden eagles are often in our driftless areas in the coulees. They're perched up in a cedar overlooking some grassland or open area where they can hunt. They have a completely different habit. They're not along the rivers looking for fish, but they could go down to carrion, a kill. That is possible if there's nothing else to eat, and so that's probably what you saw there.
Very good. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Steve Betchkal, our guest today, a birder extraordinaire and author of A Guide to the 50 or So Best Places to Find Birds in Wisconsin, our guest. And birder extraordinaire Judith Sears-Poisson joins us again during our Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. More than ever, you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio and the Ideas Network for great discussions. And more than ever, we rely on the money you give us to keep that talk on the air. So your gift today, any amount, helps fund the important discussions that you count on. So please give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we've got a great match going
here.
We
do. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,000 in effect right now. We're at just shy of $800 so far, so lots of room to get in on that challenge. We need $1,200 more to make that match. It's a great time to pledge because for every dollar you give, these generous supporters from Madison will donate an additional dollar. It's their way of encouraging you to support WPR. Double the impact of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On this program, we cover topics like environmental and consumer issues. We talk about gardening, how-to topics, Wisconsin authors, Wisconsin food. I think you get a lot of great information from this program, and it's possible because of your financial support of WPR. So I hope you'll support this program today. Put a vote in for the 11 to 12:30 time slot here with your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And giving takes just 2 minutes of your time. Tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay for it. Think about using your credit card. It saves time, postage, and paper, and puts your money to work right away. But no matter how you choose to give or how much, the important thing is that you take the next 2 minutes to make your pledge. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
When you listen to WPR, you're not alone. Sure, you might be alone in your car, or maybe in the home or the office, but you're really sharing that experience with me and with a whole lot of other listeners.
We all have a lot in common. We share values that bind us together, and we have a lot of common interests, too, like watching and listening to birds. Your support is a big part of what makes this program possible for you and for the community you share it with. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
During this drive, we'd like to say thank you for your support in a special way. So when you pledge $10 a month, $120 over the course of a year, to support WPR programs, you can choose a thank you gift that will provide 40 meals to a Wisconsin food bank near you.
You can let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio to those in need in your community. Pledge $10 a month and choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here's how you do it. You go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. I'm Larry Mueller with Judith Sears-Poisson, asking for your support of WPR. And thanks in advance for your gift, by the way. Maybe it was $5 or $10 or $30 a month, whatever amount that's right for you, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And I just want to remind you that we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,000 in effect right now, offered by generous supporters from Madison. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200. If you do food for $40 for $120, it turns into $240. It's really a great opportunity. So take advantage of this match to make your gift go even further in paying for WPR programs. Get your pledge matched dollar for dollar. Do it right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm figuring you've now made your decision. Judith was so persuasive.
I persuade Larry of all kinds of things.
Man, she's got me hoodwinked, I think, but there's no hoodwinking going on here. She has talked you into making a decision to support Wisconsin Public Radio, and you might be looking for the best way to fit it into your budget. Well, you can become a sustainer. That might be the answer. You decide on a monthly amount to be charged to your bank account or your credit card and set it up to be ongoing.
Becoming a sustainer is a powerful way of donating because it provides reliable funding for WPR, and it's also convenient and affordable for you. Choose a monthly amount, say $10 or $20, and become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And as an added incentive, when you become a sustainer, you'll automatically be entered in all of our station-wide drawings and sweepstakes.
And maybe you donated a few years back and you feel like you've done your part, but you enjoy listening to WPR year after year. We need your continued support to keep this business going strong.
Has it been a while since you donated? This is a perfect time to rejoin at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 because you can take advantage of that dollar-for-dollar matching pledge up to $2,000, and we will be very glad to have you back.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, that dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect, about $800 to go here. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR goes twice as far.
And I really love this special premium we have, so I'm going to remind you of it again. When you give $120, that's $10 a month, you can get our Food for 40 thank you gift and provide meals to those facing hunger right in your area. It's such a great way to do two good things at once. Support WPR, feed the hungry in your area with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you make your pledge, consider becoming a sustainer. Your sustaining membership automatically renews every year. You'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments. Easy to set up. Great way to make a lasting impression on WPR. You choose, though, how to give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. 202-2552.
Sharon and Charles from Madison say, "We have been donating for a number of years. We sincerely appreciate how you enrich our lives and the life of the community in which we live." What a nice sentiment.
Absolutely. And they donated. How about you? Donate right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Thank you so much for listening in here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest today, Steve Bechtko. I'm telling you, as you listen to him talk about birds and birding, you understand what a professional he is when it comes to this. He is a really experienced birder. Great book out there. All This and Robins, too, a guide to the 50 or so best places to find birds in Wisconsin. Great to have him along. If you have a question for him or maybe an experience to share, join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call. And Mark in Green Bay has a comment. Let's go to Mark. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call today.
Sure.
My question is, where did all the birds go? Now, four winters ago, I had a house up in O'Connell Falls, Wisconsin. And I probably had about 7 or 8 feeders out in the head with a wide variety of different types of bird food. And I could count, and they were in two. I had like 3 feeders in one section of the yard and 3 feeders at the front of the house. And I could count at any time up to 100 birds working the feeders. I mean, it was just beautiful. Then that summer, the yellow finches would number 50, 60 eating off the feeders. It was just really a sight to see. The next winter, half as many birds. And that following summer, half as many finches. And then the next year, the next winter and the next summer, we were hard-pressed to see any birds, any finches. We didn't change anything. We still had a heated bird bath. It's kind of perplexing. Where did they all go?
Well, tough Mark, one. You are describing the great scientific question of our generation. Where are the birds going and what's happening to them? And in general, we know that birds are declining. Now, most of those birds that are declining are not the residents that you would see at your feeder in winter. They are what we call the neotropical migrants, those birds that travel long distances and face great stressors along the way. Charlie Kemper, the bird doctor from Chippewa Falls, was back in the 60s, almost 50 years ago now, collecting up dead birds from a TV tower in Eau Claire. And on one night in September in the fall, he collected 36,000, I believe, dead birds from the tower kills there.
Wow.
And I worked at near that TV station in the 90s, and we then had kills of 3,000 birds a night. And so there are not the numbers of birds passing through. We see this everywhere. The old-timers will tell you that the birds aren't like they used to be. You go out in the woods in May, the woods are more quiet. There are less of these eruptive migration events that come through with the birds, you know, the trees dripping birds, as we describe it. But birds are fluctuating in terms of feeder use. There are other things at play as well. Are the birds finding natural food sources? For example, in a good year for birds, poplar, birch, catkins are in abundance. Spruce cones are in abundance. And so birds can feed on natural sources, and they are not as dependent on your feeder as they would be in other years. Is there a die-off based on a disease? Is the population drop something that way? Are there other feeders that have sprouted up in your neighborhood that are drawing the birds away? Is there a hawk in the neighborhood? One hawk perched in the neighborhood can cut down the traffic to your feeder by 100%. And so all these things factor in. Evening grosbeaks, which are a winter bird, have had a huge decline. And so years ago, we used to talk about having evening grosbeaks at our feeders. Recently, this year, they did bounce back, and there was a lot more activity. Population of evening grosbeaks seems to have picked up. But they had been receding back towards Michigan for years, for decades, in fact. And so people were seeing less and less of those. So what happens at your feeder is a particular question to your neighborhood, as well as a question of what the population of birds are doing. But like I said, most of those things, chickadees, goldfinches, would not fluctuate as greatly as the neotropical migrants do. Complicated answer. Scientists are studying why birds decline, and even they have a hard time because it's so hard to gather data that makes sense and that you can translate easily. So
yeah.
I can't quite answer your question for why they aren't at your feeder, but worldwide, birds are in decline for many reasons, a lot of those human caused.
Yeah. Mark, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call very much. I want to give Larry and Two Rivers a chance to join us. Larry, hello.
Good morning. I've had a unique observation all winter. I think it's unique. A pair or two Carolina wrens. Is that unusual to see them all winter long in this part of the state?
It is, especially two of them. What you are witnessing there is another stressor. This is climate change, in effect, I believe. Birds like Carolina wrens, usually their range is to about the Wisconsin-Illinois border in a typical year. In a hard winter, Carolina wrens will not do well because they are not birds that are adapted to that kind of weather. But, you know, we had kind of a mild winter last year. So far, this hasn't been a kind winter to birds. But when we see more Carolina wrens, when we see more orchard orioles, we see more summer tanagers, we see these birds that are southern birds bleeding into our state more commonly. That is because some of these birds have actually shifted their ranges northward. And scientific studies are proving that birds are doing that. They are responding to warmer springs and things like that, so that they are moving incrementally farther north, faster. They're laying their eggs sooner. You know, and so all these studies that are out there are showing that, you know, contrary to some people who tell you that climate change is a hoax, birds are proving that this is actually a phenomenon that's affecting where our wildlife exists. Mm. But yeah, to see two at your feeder is very uncommon. In the state of Wisconsin in a given year, they show up in dozens of places, but we're talking maybe, you know, less than 100 birds in the state total, I would guess, yeah. Just off the top of my head. And you see them, you hear reports about them all the time. But to have two at your feeder, you're very fortunate. Enjoy, take a lot of pictures and share.
Yeah, absolutely. You're a lucky guy, Larry. Appreciate your call. Thomas in Manitowoc, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to know, Steve, have you ever heard of a golden eagle that attacked a timber wolf, a deer, or a fox at all? Because there is a video out of Mongolia, if you punch into your computer, hunting wolves with golden eagles in Mongolia. It has really good footage of golden eagles taking down wolves.
It's yeah,
amazing. And I've never heard of that happening here in the United States, but it's fascinating to watch that.
Yeah, I haven't seen that particular video, Thomas, but there's a famous video out there about the golden eagles in Europe knocking chamois goats off of cliffs.
Yes.
They'll dive down and knock them off balance. The goats will tumble down the cliff and die, and then the eagle will go down and feed on the animal. Now, the question with hunting is you can only kill what you can carry. And what you can match. And you can tell, it's interesting, with hawks, you can tell what prey they pick upon by the size of their legs and the strength of their legs and talons. And so a bird like a rough-legged hawk has these tiny little foot leg bone. What we look at as a leg is really their foot that sticks out below the feathers.
Yeah.
But it's really tiny and fragile, and they can pick up mice. And a red-tailed hawk can fight with a rabbit. A rabbit can pack quite a kick. And so to take down a rabbit, you have to be a pretty strong bird. Now, to take down a wolf is quite a challenge for any bird of prey, and I think that they would be mismatched. A young wolf, a sick wolf, would still be tough for a golden eagle to take down because a wolf is fully capable of defending itself from a golden eagle. Now, you know, using them to hunt, you know, maybe the birds, and I haven't seen the video, but maybe the birds are used to harass the wolves while the hunters move in. I need to understand that a little bit better. But for them to take down a full-size wolf would be a tough job for any full-grown eagle. In fact, what we do is we measure how much they can carry, and an eagle can carry a few pounds, say less than 5 pounds off the ground, actually carried off the ground. And so the prey is usually limited by what they can carry back to their nest site. And if they're feeding on it on the ground, you know, first of all, they have to kill it, which is a tough job with a wolf. And then, you know, they can't carry it back. And so the size of the prey is limited by the size of the bird and the strength of the bird. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see that video.
Yeah, it would be. We'll see if we can find it. Tom, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. And, you know, if you want to find something online, the person I always turn to is Judith Sears Poisson, who has a remarkable ability to find pretty much anything you need. And she's with me again here today to talk with me and with you about listener contributions, because they pay for all the programs you enjoy here on the Ideas Network. And during this winter membership drive, we're asking you to take action by becoming a contributor to WPR. Every gift helps support the programs you rely on. So I hope you'll make your contribution at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We've met our match, but we've got more.
Yes,
more,
and I just want to point out that those pledges help pay for that internet connection so I can find things like the Mongolian video about the golden eagle attacking the wolf, which I will try to get up there. So thank you to everyone who helped us make the generous match we had earlier this program. That was a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,000. Thank you so much. We do have another goal. Our goal for the show today is 60 pledges, and we're still looking for 31, so we're almost halfway there. Be the next person to help us make that goal with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're with you all day long here on the Ideas Network, whether you drive to work or run errands with us, or maybe you cook dinner with us, or listen at home or at work. You get interesting discussions whenever you want them. We're always here, and you make that possible with your donations. So please, Wisconsin Public Radio wouldn't be what it is without your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And I know that we have people that are listening while they're having their lunches. We also have mail carriers who are out on their routes and are listening in the truck as they're going around. So I know people are listening all over the place. And we make giving as easy as possible. We just need your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay for it.
You can save time and money. You use a credit card if you can. I did that just yesterday, or was it the day before? Yesterday, I think.
You wanted that cookbook, so I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, it was yesterday. So that's what I did. But you can, maybe better yet, start automatic sustaining donations directly from your bank account. You choose how much to give, and then go ahead and do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When we ask for your support, we're speaking to you. Yes, that's you.
Don't look over your shoulder. I look over my shoulder. I don't see anybody. I see an image of myself in the glass. So if you're listening right now, you value this program. You rely on it being here for you.
You count on us, and we're counting on you. Listener support is what makes this program possible. It's really that simple. You're a listener. Now be a donor. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Dan Stein, president and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. Most of the people we serve don't need three meals a day. They need something to assist them to get over a hurdle at the end of the month when money runs tight. People are really surprised to learn that more than half the people we serve actually have someone in their household with a full-time job. The person that's hungry isn't somebody else that resides someplace else, but it is neighbors, it is family, it is friends. In southern Wisconsin, 43% are children. They're people that really don't have much they can do about their situation. Food for 40 has provided over 200,000 meals that throughout the state we're able to meet some of the needs of people who struggle with hunger. I think people in communities understand that there's a problem within their community, but I don't think a lot of people have an idea of the magnitude of the problems. We're very grateful that people throughout the state are supporting Food for 40 by supporting Wisconsin Public Radio and help the people in their neighborhoods, their family, friends, whomever it may be that are struggling with hunger. It's a perfect example of an easy way to make a difference for the people that we serve.
I think that's one of the really cool things that we have going for us here at WPR. I hope you'll pledge at WPR.org or go to 888-202-2552 and then choose that Food for 40 thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears Poisson asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio in whatever amount right for you?
Exactly. And we are looking to get 30 more pledges in the next 35 minutes. That's really doable.
You're lying, Judith. It's only 29.
Oh, you're right. Well, thank you to that person that just pledged. We're looking for 29 pledges in the next now 34 minutes. Your pledge right now helps keep this program going strong. Make your contribution, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting WPR right now is a great thing you can do with 2 minutes of your time. You just give your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, how you'd like to pay. And whether you call or pledge online, we keep your personal information safe. We do not share it with any other organization.
And I'm guessing that there's a very good chance that all of you listening agree with Carol and Gary from Judah. They pledge because they say, we love listening to Larry's show. Well, if you love listening to Larry's show, and I'm guessing you do, we hope you'll join them. Your gift supports the stories, information, programs that keep you connected to the world, connected to the rest of the state, and entertained. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And maybe giving a dollar a day, that's the right amount for your Wisconsin Public Radio listening. About $30 a month. When you think about it, dollar a day, that's a great value.
It really is. And, you know, any way you do it, whether it's monthly transfers or all at once, we'll make it convenient and easy for you. Make that pledge now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Still looking for 29 more pledges to go in the next 30 minutes. That's WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Few things convey a sense of place or of time or day and of season more than the calls of birds. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. How closely do you watch birds? Do you have a good sense of which birds return to your yard in spring and when? Maybe you want to know how to attract them to your garden or your lawn or where to go for great viewing. Maybe you want to know that. Our guest is experienced birder and naturalist Steve Bechkel. And he can answer those questions and a whole lot more when you call in. That number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. And don't forget to check our Facebook page. That's at The Larry Mueller Show. And click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics as well as links to useful resources. We'll be back with Steve right after this look at the news. I think it's great that and amazing that no matter where we live, what our age, what your occupation or where your political leaning is, almost everybody enjoys bird watching. And whether you just notice one singing as you walk past it in a tree or you go into a remote spot with your scope, you're probably likely to want to be able to identify what you're seeing. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Steve Bechkel is a broadcast journalist, very experienced birder and naturalist, the author of the book All This and Robins Too, A Guide to 50 or So Best Places to Find Birds in Wisconsin. He leads international birding travel groups as well. Joins us from our WPR studios in Eau Claire. And Steve, as always, great to have you with us today. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, it's fun. Thanks for inviting me.
You do these, where do you tend to go? If you do an international birding trip, where are you most likely to go?
Well, I have been restricted because of means to the nearby places, Central America and the Caribbean. But my next objective, my great objective, is to head to Australia. I'd like to go and visit Australia because it has so many strange new birds. And it's one of my life goals to stare up at the sky of completely foreign stars in the southern hemisphere and to watch the toilet go the other way around.
that is a great goal to have. I love that. I love that. Joanne, you know what? Before we go to Joanne in Huntley, Illinois, I've had an email from Stephanie who's been hanging here for a while. She said, we have a toddler who loves watching and listening to birds. We just moved to a new house with a pond in the back. We're anticipating seeing lots of birds this spring and summer. Any especially good books or resources for young children interested in birds? Most of the guidebooks seem to be for the older age groups.
How old is the child, I'm wondering?
Toddler. So three. Yeah,
okay.
Three, four,
the best,
maybe.
The best bet here is to start reading books about birds and nature. Built for young kids. The kind that are, you know, mom and dad read to the child books. That's the best thing you can do. Get a child interested by talking about birds in these great picture books where the stories are built to a young child. Once that happens, and once you get a child hooked on birds, I would suggest the other thing is to take them camping and walking and hiking outside. Before they even get to a bird book, the point is to get a child exposed to love of nature and to get them loving the outdoors, away from the video games and away from the TV screen and outside. And once a child is doing that, There is no guarantee that they will fall in love with birds for the rest of their life, but there is a likelihood that they will become a person who is in love with the outdoors and has a feeling for conservation and for wild things. And so once you get to the point where the child says, you know, hey, I want a bird guide, well, what age are they? Then you can decide whether or not you want to buy them their first Sibley or if you want to go with something simpler. But I just say, you know, take it easy, get them involved in good books, and take them outside, and we'll see what happens.
And spend time
by the way, that's great. I love it that kids are involved. I'm a little nervous because there are so many kids in front of screens, and they're not out walking the woods and the fields and the shorelines looking for birds. So
that's very good. And, you know, with all the great state and county parks we have here in Wisconsin, there's so many great opportunities to get people outside and get the youngsters out there.
We are a great state for it. In fact, I introduce my kids. I have two sons. One doesn't have anything to do with bird watching because I think I took him out and he got tired of having dad make bird stops, and so he had to wait in the car. The other now is a scientist working in Denali National Park recording bird songs for the National Park Service. So you see it, I had a 50% return rate on my teaching and my parenting there.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, I always have people ask for them to post photos. And I know there's a great one up there of a pair of loons on the water. But there's also, we've been talking a lot about feeders today. There's also a great photo of a pheasant that comes to listener Stacy's bird feeders. And she wonders if that's common that a pheasant would come to a feeder.
No, not at all.
I don't think it is. I mean, I've certainly wild turkeys, I've got a buddy who would like to get rid of the wild turkeys that come to his feeder. He tries to scare them off.
Yeah, if you scatter feed on the ground, turkeys are very fond of that. I suppose a ringneck pheasant might be the same way, but a pheasant is not quite as much a bird that would come out into the open, into a yard. I mean, if you're right next to a great prairie, you know, you might have some crowing on the edge of your yard, but yeah. It's very uncommon to have them walk into a yard and hang around a feeder. You know, sometimes the males get very bold. I've heard of stories where they're attacking windows and mirrors on cars or standing up to cars that are in their territory, you know, because they're very bold about protecting a territory. But they're not a feeder bird.
Joanne in Huntley, Illinois, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've seen a bird twice in my yard that I've never seen before, and I'm 80 years old, and I'm normally up in the Nicolet Forest during the summer. It's about the size of a woodpecker, the same coloring, except in the middle of the back and the breast, it's red. But it's not bright red like a red-headed woodpecker. It's more with a tinge of burgundy hue, but it's a big, big area of that color, and I wondered if he knew what kind of bird that is.
All right, Joanne, let's play bird detective. When are you seeing it, right now?
No, I'm not seeing it right now. I saw it a little earlier this morning, and I saw it yesterday afternoon, and it hung around quite a while because I scattered the seed in the yard so I can have lots of birds.
Mm-hmm. And you've never seen this bird before at your feeder?
Never, never, never.
Never saw it up north either. Is it feeding on the ground, suet on a tree?
All of them are feeding on the ground. They were so crowded on the feeder, I just scattered it and said, be present at my table.
It sounds to me, when we talk about red birds, you know, the usual eastern birds, and there in Illinois, I'm trying to picture what a bird would be that would be red. And so you said it has red on the belly and the back?
And the back, the chest, right under the beak, you know, under the chin going down, it's that color. And then there's a spot of it, it's about an inch and a half square is what it looks like, but the feathers could be overlapping. But it's was so pronounced.
Mm.
On its chest, you said that part.
Yeah.
That and the back, they're the same color.
Uh-huh. Well, now you know what a house finch looks like, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, red birds at this time of year, we're talking about, of course, cardinals, which you would know, and robins, which you'd know. Woodpeckers, the red-headed woodpecker has a lot of red on it, but that has a red head. The red-bellied has no red would be noticeable on the breast and a little on the head. And so here's my suggestion. You really want to know what it is, snap a picture and send it to me or your local bird expert, and you know, you can get an instant response. You take a picture and you send it out. Anybody is willing to help you out with identification, but I think that's the next step. You've provided me a description, and I'm failing you here, but if you can get a picture of that and send it to somebody, we can help you solve the problem. Solve this bird detective issue.
Absolutely. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling.
And I'm really enjoying your show.
Oh, appreciate it.
Great. Again.
All right.
Thanks, Joanne. Thanks so much for calling.
Wait, Larry, I want to add, by the way, I looked it up in my handy encyclopedia again, and the maximum amount that anybody has found a golden eagle can carry is 7 pounds. It hauled away a bird in the early 1900s was caught carrying a 7-pound jackrabbit. And so I just want to answer for that question. I think it was Kevin or Thomas had that question. And again, whether they can kill a wolf or not, I can't answer that. But carrying capacity is generally believed to be 10 pounds or less, and most of them can comfortably carry about 2 pounds is what I read here.
You're not going to carry off a deer.
I doubt they're going to attack it. I've seen hawks harass animals larger than they are without really any sense. I mean, the young birds that are kind of dumb and inexperienced might harass a bird or animal that's way too big to kill, and that does happen. But they soon learn that that's a waste of their energy.
Yeah. We got a Facebook photo of a pileated or pileated woodpecker from Joe. Thanks for that, Joe. And a caller thinks Joanne's bird is a pine grosbeak.
It could be.
Could be.
It depends on where you live in Illinois. That's a long way south. But, yeah, it could be a pine grosbeak, a very pinkish red. All over the male. The female would be ochre-colored, but the male would have pinkish on the head, back, breast. Mm-hmm. That is a possibility.
Matt on Facebook said he saw a flock of red crossbills at his feeder yesterday. Never seen them before. And this is near Wausau.
Mm-hmm. Good year for those.
Yeah.
Good year for red crossbills. And I've been hearing about it, especially people in the Northeast. We have had pine grosbeaks in across the northern part of the state, and some of those have been showing up south of the middle of the state. Also, this has been a good year for red poles, very good year for that.
Yeah.
And early in the season, there were evening grosbeaks coming south into some parts, I believe, as far as maybe Ozaukee County or Sheboygan County, they were showing up.
Yeah.
So it was a good year early, and then it quieted down. But, yeah, crossbills, again, are dependent on the natural food source. If there are a lot of spruce cones and spruce feed, you'll find a lot of them. If up north that crashes and they don't have much to eat, they come into Wisconsin by the hundreds.
Oh. Jim and Camp Douglas, hello.
Hello there, fellas. Thanks for taking my call here.
You bet.
When you were talking about those TV towers or whatever, I remember when I was a student at Stevens Point, I had an ornithologist, Professor Vince High. I don't know if you're familiar with Vince.
I've heard of him, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, he was yawning one day, and I said, "What are you tired for?" And he told me he was out picking up birds underneath TV towers. So that kind of brought back a memory. But anyway, I've been trying to attract purple martins for several years. I've got an aluminum-framed house located strategically close to the house but not right next to it, at the right height. I've got starlings I've kept out of it, and I've introduced some gourd homes last year. And I open it up in May so that by that time the sparrows and whatever else might be interested is found their other spaces that are available. But I haven't seen any martins or anything. I know it's a little tough, but I thought after 5-6 years I might at least somebody take a chance on it. But
well, first
maybe
of all,
if I put a
go ahead.
I was thinking about putting a vacancy sign on there.
Yeah.
If only they could read. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could put up directions, too, somewhere. But the problem here, Jim, is that martins are one of those decreasing birds, severely decreasing birds. There's a lot less than when your grandfather and my grandfather were putting up martin houses, and there was a heyday. People had martin houses up. And now, if you look around, martin houses are actually hard to find, and they're spread widely. Those that have been continuous and have the right terrain have been productive, and many have failed. I grew up with a martin house in my yard. That neighborhood couldn't raise a martin family no matter how we tried now, because all the trees have grown up. That's one of the biggest things. I mean, how much clearance, how much launch space do you have around the house? Because martins are very particular about how much space you have. They need that clearance. If the trees get too big around and they're crowded in by trees, they hate that. That's why we often see them along lakes or shorelines, because there's a lot of launch clearance there where they can get out of their house and fly. They're not overshadowed by the trees. So that's one thing. Otherwise, you know, in your neighborhood, you know, for a martin to drop in and a family to select that, it's the TV tower issue again. You know, there just aren't as many birds anymore. And for them to locate and choose your house, there have to be, you know, there has to be a male that claims it, a female that follows. And they're colonial, so they usually like to have several birds around with them. And, you know, that's harder and harder to come by. I appreciate that you're trying. Purple martins are one of my favorite birds. My ringtone on my phone is a purple martin song.
Ah!
And I think that having grown up with them, they're one of my favorites all time. I just love them. The biggest member of the swallow family. By the way, I want to add that TV tower story in Stevens Point.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't pick the birds up fast enough, the problem with that is if ornithologist doesn't get there, the crows and gulls show up and start eating the dead birds. And so they claim them and gulp them before the scientist does. So you got to get up really early in the morning to pick up the dead birds.
Oh, man. Steve Vetchko, our guest today. Steve, it's always a great pleasure to talk with you. Really, you do such a wonderful job, and I always look forward to it. Are you coming out with another book?
I am. Two books, in fact. I have a book on Wisconsin. I'm increasing it. I'm doubling the coverage area to 100 best places to find birds.
Oh.
And then I will be doing, that's out at the end of this year, and then I will be doing another guide, part of the Birding Trail series of guides through a publisher in Montana on South Florida. So I will have a book out on where to go find birds in the Everglades, the Keys, and the Miami area in 2014.
You better be letting us know when that book on Wisconsin comes out.
I will do that. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure. I love it.
It's always a great pleasure. Steve Vetchko, our guest today, to talk with us about birds. One of those rare birds that does a great job at Wisconsin Public Radio. Now, she's not a rare bird, I guess. She looks, she's pretty, she's commonly good bird. Judith Sears Poisson are joining us
you
here.
You can often spot me at a feeder, Larry.
Yeah. Usually with a banana in her hand, though. You count on WPR. Our Ideas Network for talk about issues that matter to you, whether you're a banana lover or not. We count on you to keep these discussions on the air, so I hope you'll make a gift right now to help us pay for those programs you depend on. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we are looking for 20 more pledges in the next 10 minutes. We've made great progress on our goal of 60 pledges during this show. We need your help to make that goal. 20 more in the next 10 minutes. Thank you so much if you've already given. But if you haven't, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Steve Vetchko does such a great job.
He really does.
Oh, man. And I hope you enjoyed listening to him or enjoy listening to him. Take a few minutes to make this program and all those programs to come here from 11 to 12:30 possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, during this winter membership drive, pledges have been coming in from $5 up through thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're considering a pledge of $100 a month. Your $1,200 contribution will really help make this program possible. Your pledge in any amount, of course, is welcome and appreciated and will help you set it up. You just have to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We have some great regular guests.
Don't we?
Great. Sandy Sawchuk helps us with our pets. We got Scott Craven, happy to speculate on your wildlife sightings. Our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Bird guys like Bill Volkert and Noel Cutright and Steve Vetchko. Great guests.
And all of them cover topics near and dear to your heart. They give you advice and new ideas because you've come to trust and appreciate these guests and many more. Support this program with your dollars. It's easy. Just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Still looking for 20 pledges.
Yeah, we need 20 more. If you haven't contributed, please do it now. And when you pledge, consider $10 a month or more, because then you can choose the Food for 40 as your thank you gift. And that's a gift that's going to provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. And you can learn some more about that, by the way, go about Food for 40 and make your pledge. Just go to WPR.org or you can call 888-202-2552.
And Karen from Lancaster did the Food for 40 thank you gift, and she says, I love the idea of providing food for the body as well as for the mind. And that really sums up. You make your pledge to support Wisconsin Public Radio. You also do Food for 40. You know, I'm guessing that like me, for many of you, Wisconsin Public Radio comes on every time you start up your car. That's a sign that it's probably time to donate.
Or because you hit your WPR preset every time a commercial airs on another station. That's a time to donate. This means that WPR is your main radio station. You're glad that we're listener supported.
And your donation makes the programs you enjoy on WPR possible, and it allows them to be uninterrupted by commercials. So give now, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
The callers were so knowledgeable. They contributed as much as the guest did.
Nothing but good compliments for your program. And I listen to what your other callers have to say because I learn from them. Kudos on that and your producers.
You can pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears Poisson asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. And maybe your guest is $10 a month, or maybe it's $5 a month, or maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we got about 19 more.
Still looking for 19 more pledges in the next 5 minutes. When you support WPR, you're supporting the Wisconsin idea. That's bringing the resources of the university to the entire state. You know, not every state has such a wonderful and inspiring idea. Not every state has the high quality programs you enjoy daily on Wisconsin Public Radio.
WPR is one of the great things about Wisconsin. It's something to take pride in. We were talking the other day, there are other stations that have as many staff as we do, but can't even get to do one live show.
Right.
And here we do lots of them.
Many hours a day.
Judith and I are here every day from 11 to 12:30 for you. I hope you'll be here for us at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
Still looking for those 19 more pledges in now about the next 4 minutes or so. Your pledge right now helps pay for the programs you count on all year long and helps us make that goal. Thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't, the time is now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I know you're going to enjoy those WPR pledge-free after 1 o'clock programs this afternoon. But to make those pledge-free afternoons possible, we need to pull together during these earlier hours. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Helps keep this drive efficient.
You've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make a habit of donating. It's a good habit. It's even a habit you can be proud of. Get started today with your pledge of any amount, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
18 more pledges to go in the last couple of minutes here of the program. Just 18 more to go. You be one of them. Help us now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, if you're not already a sustainer, this is a great time to become one. It's easy to set up the ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's convenient for you and it provides reliable funding for WPR.
And don't forget, when you give $120, that's $10 a month, you can get our Food for 40 thank you gift. Provide meals to those facing hunger in your area is a great way to do two things at once with your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Robert from Hurley says, twice a month I traverse the state north and south and WPR rides shotgun. I cannot imagine a more pleasant travel companion. Please join Robert in with your support of Wisconsin Public Radio, 888-202-2552, WPR.org.
That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.